stuck in the freeway in the LA traffic jam, overwhelmed with that. Yeah. Right. Now, what you would do is, now, whatever it is that we do, we're going to start, we've got three metaphors now. We're going to start one. We're going to tell it. We're going to say, so, and we could do this either inside or outside of trance. That's important. We could do this either inside or outside of trance. We could, remember the Ericksonian inductions we did at your practitioner training? You could use an Ericksonian induction and have them in a trance and then start your stories. What's that? Well, like induce the trance and then tell the stories, or you could just tell the stories while you're talking to them. To induce, I would say, well,
like you do on stage.
It could be. We'll see. We'll see if I finish them all. So you could, for me, I weave trance in and out of NLP. For me, it's tough to make the distinction between trance and NLP for me. But if I'm going to do a formal trance induction where I do like an Ericksonian induction or some of the inductions we'll teach you on Saturday, I might do that and then tell them stories once they're in a trance. I might have them look at a spot on a wall and go into expanded vision and tell them stories. Or I might just tell them stories and then do some more intervention and then tell them more stories. So my intervention is going to depend each time on how I'm choosing to work with this individual. But seeing this, we could then, and what we want to do is we want to have that person hook up to resources inside these stories that they need. Organization, the ability to say no. Assistant, or the ability to delegate, or that center, finding that centered place within oneself. So you could just have the character in the story, like the ship at the sea. It's interesting, but the other day I was listening to the radio. And as I'm listening to the radio, I like to listen to the radio. You know, I've always listened to the radio, and the other day I was listening. I don't like to watch TV too much because I like to make the pictures inside my mind. You know what I mean? So there I am listening to the radio, making my own connections because I love to listen to like those old radio serial stories and things like that. And I'm listening to the radio, and I just got sucked into it. Just kind of sucked me in. And there I was, writing the story. And the story was about a captain on a ship at sea. And the ship was, there was this storm that came in. It's like the fog came in a matter of seconds. You know what I mean? It's like one moment it was clear, the next moment there was fog. And then after the fog, the storm came in. And as the storm came in, the ship was turning from side to side, and it was just being thrashed about. And the captain didn't know what to do because the ship was just being thrown from side to side, and the crew were being thrown, and people were hanging overboard, and they were hanging onto the ropes. And the captain froze for a moment because there was so much going on. It's like, how do you handle so much going on at once? And the captain he stood there and he was just confused. Like, what do I do? And he had to stop for a moment. He found a place inside himself where he became centered. He found that calm and centered place. And he realized then that the only way to make it out of this was to find that calm center place, to operate from that calm center place. And he knew he couldn't do it alone. He knew he couldn't do everything. It was impossible to do everything that he needed to do to get the ship back on course and to survive this thing alone. But he had to operate from that calm and centered place. And immediately he remembered a teacher who said to him, "You've got to get organized. You've got to delegate. You've got to get out there and pull the crew together. You can't do this alone. You need to find the people, and through your communication, give each person their own task to do." So he began to make those connections at the unconscious level. And as he made those connections, he found that the storm inside seemed to calm. And even though there was apparent chaos happening around him, He immediately began to take action. He went to the first person and asked them to, he said, first mate, buckle down the hatches. Get this, tie up this and that. And he began to rush around the ship. And just then a huge wave came up and knocked the ship up on its end. Kind of like a friend of mine who used to corral horses. And sometimes on boats, yeah. And sometimes corralling horses can be a challenging thing to do. Because there's a lot of action happening around. You know, there's a lot of things going on when you're corralling horses, especially wild horses. And my friend was telling me about this time when he was corralling wild horses. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a really wild horse before, but they're really hard to contain. Especially when you got, you know, tens or even hundreds of them. So it's all about organization. Because you've got to, there's certain horses that are going to be leaders to the other horses. They're going to lead them in certain directions. So it's about finding those leaders amongst the horses to lead the others in the direction that you want to go. It's kind of like a rapport leader or somebody that the other horses will tend to follow. And I'm just talking on and on. You get the picture, though, right? So you're going to start a story. I'm just making this up as I'm going, so. Yeah, so you're going to start a story, and you may not finish it. You may just go to the other one and then go into another one. Then maybe you'll do some intervention or something there in between, and then you'll finish the stories in the reverse order. So if I went from the ship at sea to the corralling horses to the gladiator standing in the battle, then I would do my intervention or whatever it was I was going to do. I'd close up the gladiator, close up the horses, and finally close up the ship at sea in the reverse order. And when I closed it up, I might not make it evident to the person ever of what I was really talking about. Because that's the only way that they're going to make their own connections that they need to make to have the breakthrough that they came for. Yeah. So that's how you do multiply embedded metaphors. They're fun to do, and they're fun to practice and play with. Yeah. Questions?
You just said they have to have their own breakthrough. So when you tell them two metaphors and you don't finish one of them, or you tell them three and you finish one?
No, I might tell all three and finish all three, but I never told them that, hey, guess what? When I was talking about the ship, it was you, dude. Totally. All you need to do is get organized and get a grip and tell people what to do, you know? Delegate. They know something. Yeah, they know something. They came to you for a reason, which is going to, that's why the deeper your metaphor is, the less connected they will be to exactly what you were talking about. Now, I was a little bit more direct in this one as I was telling that. I was pretty direct. And I told the story. I actually, what's nice for trance is sometimes if you throw an embedded quote in there, did you notice how I did that? I did an embedded quote inside the metaphor. The guy who remembered the teacher who told him, you got to get organized. You got to find that calm place within yourself or your ship will sink. You're going down. No. So I told an embedded quote inside the metaphor, which makes it quite hypnotic. But this is really a magical way to help people create change. And they'll get their learnings in an inductive way. And they may ask you afterwards, what was the meaning of this and that? Say, I don't know. You may need to continue making your own connections after you leave. Sometimes I'll leave people when they're still wondering about what a metaphor was about or something. I'll let them go and let them make their own connections and then do a follow-up session with them or something later. Like Milton Erickson would have people do strange things sometimes. Like he might have them carry around a wrap, like give them a ball of paper or something and say they came in because they weren't connecting with their wife. And he'd do something like, here, this is your task. I want you to take this. I want you to carry that around for the next 3 weeks. Everywhere you go. If you put it in your pocket, I'm okay if you put it in your pocket. But if you're going to change clothes, you're going to need to take it out. If you go to take a shower or something like that, I want you to take it out and I want you to put it on the counter next to the shower. I just want you to carry that around for 3 weeks. Now, I'll see you again, but I won't see you until you're able to tell me that, yes, in fact, you did carry that around with you for 3 weeks. And you had it everywhere you were. If it wasn't in your presence, it was right there nearby you. And I want you just to get whatever learnings you get from that as you're doing that. And I'll see you in 3 weeks. What's that have anything to do with anything? I don't know. I didn't mean anything when I told them that. But that person is going to make, they're going to get inductive learnings. They're looking for something. And when we look for something, we create meaning. Oh, yeah. Yeah, please. Yeah, go ahead. So kind of fun with metaphors. There's a lot of stuff you can do with this. And that's how you do multiply embedded metaphors. So you can play with these as you're doing your interventions, because today we're going to be doing detailed personal histories at the end of the day. Tomorrow we're going to be doing interventions, and you may choose to add metaphors as part of your repertoire of things that you're going to do with the client when it comes to healing, helping, assisting them in healing their issue.
No? So we've only done one part of the process here, and that's the metaphors, and then we'll learn how to do the intervention tomorrow, which will be dropped in the center.